independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRP listener line as we're being joined by Mike Florio, the legendary Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, who's been all over the Deshaun Watson news better than literally anybody else from tip to now, the settlement day of Deshaun Watson in the NFL. 11 games, $5 million. Mike, what was your reaction whenever you heard the details?
Well, look, I wasn't surprised because we've known for about a week now that they were trying to work out a settlement. And as we got closer and closer to today, the range seemed to be setting up as somewhere between 8 games and 12 games with a fine in the range of $5 million. And it just sounds like at the end of the day, the union was dug in at 10. The league was dug in at 12. So what do? You split the difference to 11. It's not like they could have split it up any finer than that. Like he's eligible to come back in the third quarter of the Texans game or something along those lines. So they settled on 11. He pays 5. It sounds like he's paying 5 in order to keep it under 12. He wants to get back on the field ASAP. So it ultimately didn't surprise me because when the appeals officer hadn't ruled, it was clear he was waiting for both sides to have an opportunity to try to work it out. They wanted to work it out. They wanted it to be over. And now it's over, and now everybody moves on.
Mike, do you think, we were discussing it here as the show began, do you think there was any discussion at all about that 12th game because of the fact that it's the Houston game and the fact that, you know, whether the league feels like, hey, you know what, he should have to go back to Houston, or from a marketing standpoint, that's a game everybody's going to watch, even the casual fan. Do you think there was any discussion about whether or not because that 12th game was in Houston?
I think, if anything, the league would have preferred that he not play the game in Houston. But you know what? His first game back is going to be a circus anyway. So if you do a two-ring circus instead of two separate one-ring circuses where he comes back and then he goes back to Houston, or you hold out for 12 games, which it sounds like Deshaun Watson just wasn't willing to do, you're going to still have that when he comes back. I guess that's my point. If it had been a 12-game suspension and he comes back week 14, it's still a big deal when he comes back. So he comes back, and it's in Houston. The fact that that's his first game back kind of takes some of the steam out of it. And it's not like he's never going to play the Texans again. It was always going to be a big deal the first time he played the Texans. So now you get first game back, first game against Texans, all in one fell swoop. So I think at the end of the day, it probably was a non-issue.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, joining us on the HRNP guest line. Mike, you mentioned just splitting the difference, which, I mean, you had the negotiations going on. It makes sense whenever you look at it from a games missed, the financial fine as well. How much do you think the NFL was trying to avoid ticking off the NFLPA? They were willing to play business here a little bit with a settlement. That way this didn't have to, you know, upset the NFLPA more, especially with the fact that it's the first time using a third-party judge, the arbitration process that's new in the National Football League.
I don't think it's a matter of upsetting the NFLPA as much as it is, number one, getting it over with. Number two, avoiding a court fight that could have resulted in the union trying to introduce evidence of owners who either aren't disciplined at all or aren't even investigated. You know, people want to point to the Robert Kraft situation because it's a similar context, but I think a more appropriate example is the Cowboys voyeurism scandal, which was never even investigated by the league, where you had Rich Dalrymple, the former PR chief and the right-hand man of Jerry Jones, secretly recording, allegedly, cheerleaders while they were changing clothes. They paid out a $2.4 million settlement to three people. That was never reported to the league at the time. It was never investigated by the league. That's a pretty compelling argument to make. Hey, look, they take a player, they investigate him thoroughly, they suspend him, they want to suspend him for a full season, and you've got these other cases where it isn't even a question of whether there's enough discipline. They don't even look in that direction. They just ignore it. So I think that's something, if I'm the NFL, I don't want the union dredging that up. And the third point is this, too. Don't rule this out as a potential motivation for the league to agree to something less than a full season. If Deshaun Watson had missed a full year, his contract gets kicked back by a full season, and that helps the Browns. Because the Browns then have him through 2027. His salary next year is the league minimum, not $46 million. They would find a big silver lining in that. They just get to press pause on his Cleveland career by a full year. Now the Browns are still going to be in year two of his contract in 2023, owing him $46 million and having to deal with the cap consequences and also knowing his contract is going to expire in 2026. I think there may have been, at some level, a willingness to avoid putting the Browns in a situation which actually would have been good for them. Now they get him for six games, and who knows how good they'll be. And this year counts as the first of his five-year contract.
Mike, speaking of the Browns, when you look at it, and we've discussed this as well, now that they know it's final, now that they know what they're dealing with, do you think that they are just going to live and die with Jacoby Brissett and Josh Rosen, or do you think, hey, now that we know it's a substantial amount of games and definitely more than what the Sue Robinson ruling was, do they start looking at other quarterbacks? Do they either wait until cuts are made? Do they look at Jimmy G? Do they say this roster's too good with him missing that many games to just put all our eggs in the basket of Jacoby Brissett?
My gut feeling is if it was a full season, they would have considered Jimmy Garoppolo. As it stands, when you know you're getting Watson back for six games, and maybe they can tread water with Jacoby Brissett. I mean, they definitely plan to go with Brissett if it was six or eight. So it's three more than the range that they had thought they would need Brissett for. I just think it makes too much sense to stick with that plan, because look at it this way. What's it going to cost to get Garoppolo? How much are you going to have to give the 49ers? How much are you going to have to pay Garoppolo? Both sides have leverage. This is what the 49ers have been waiting for, an opportunity for the 49ers to put their thumb on the scale on one side and Garoppolo to put his thumb on the scale on the other side. So I think it would be bad for the Browns. It would be hard for them to explain how they ended up giving up more for Jimmy Garoppolo than they got for Baker Mayfield.
What if they just cut him, though? What if the Niners just cut him? At that point, if you're the Browns, as an insurance policy and because of the rest of the roster, you go, well, if it doesn't cost us anything, then we should probably take a flyer on him. He's better than Josh Rosen.
Well, that's a possibility, but when will the 49ers cut him? Because even though the cuts to 53 happen on August 30, the 49ers could still hold him up until September 10, up until 4 p.m. that day, Eastern time. If you cut him before then, you don't owe him his salary. And if you wait until that day, and I don't know, how useful is he to anyone at that point? If somebody who has to come in off the street, when would he be ready to go? Again, I just think that it's better at this point to ride with Brissett. I just have a feeling that's what they're going to do. And Garoppolo, he's probably more likely at that point to go somewhere where he knows he has a chance to play, not just in September, October, November, but also December and January. And we know that he won't be playing once Deshaun Watson's back.
Mike, we were asking the question a moment ago before you hopped on with us. Davis Mills said that the Texans were going to shock the world. What would shock you about the Houston Texans in 2022?
Being relevant after Thanksgiving, being in the playoff mix beyond Thanksgiving. I think that's what every team ultimately should be trying to do. I know teams say we want to win the Super Bowl. They say that because they have to sell tickets and get people to give a crap about the team. The reality is, if you're still alive in December, that's when kids are making their Christmas lists. That's when, for a lot of teams, it's cold weather and, you know, the season's worn on, and do I really want to make time to go to a game today when I could be doing Christmas shopping or just relaxing at home and my house decorating? No. So that would be a shock. And I like the way Lovie Smith explained it. Nobody expects him to be any good. So if they're competitive at all, it will be a shock. It doesn't mean they're going to win the Super Bowl. It just means they're going to be relevant, that they're going to contend. And that's all any team can hope for. You just hope to be in the vicinity of the porch. And then one of these years you climb up onto the porch, and one of these years you kick the door in. That's all teams can really do, is just try to put themselves in the vicinity of that front porch.
Mike, is there any scenario in your mind as it relates to shocking the world and Davis Mills specifically that the Texans aren't looking for a quarterback in the draft after this season?
It just depends on how he plays. That's it. They think they have something. You know, I had said in the past that maybe Jimmy Garoppolo ends up in Houston. If he's kept by the 49ers, maybe he will. I don't know. They seem to be all in with Davis Mills. They think they have something in Damian Pierce. If Pierce ends up being the guy that folks think he can be, and if he stays healthy all season long, that makes it easier to pass the ball. You got Brandon Cooks, who can be very potent in the passing game. Chris Sims pointed out today on PFC Live, though, it's hard to think of one impact player on defense. And at some point, your defense is going to need to make a stop if you really do want to be relevant and competitive. But I just think a lot of it comes down to how Mills plays. He did enough last year to get this year. Think about Jalen Hurts in Philly. He did enough in his first year to get the chance to be the guy the second year. He did enough in the second year to be the guy for the third year. And then that's how it is in the NFL. When there's more veteran quarterbacks available than ever, and there are good quarterbacks every year in the draft. I know this year's class wasn't as good as recent classes have been. But until you declare yourself to be a shortlist franchise quarterback, it really is a year-to-year existence.
Mike, we really appreciate you taking a few minutes on a very busy day, I'm sure, for you. Great work with all of this, and hope to catch up again very soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
It's Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, the latest about Deshaun Watson. League was at 12, NFLPA was at 10. This compromise on the 11, was it enough? Can the Texans be relative after Thanksgiving? And was Florio right? Is there not an impact player on the Houston Texans defense? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.